My message today is entitled, Waiting, Hoping. I confessed earlier at the 9 o'clock service that I am I'm not very good at waiting. I don't know about most of you. Admittedly, I have my suspicions about it, but waiting is probably one of my least favorite things to do. Now, I'm not actually saying that I am bad at it. I'm just saying I don't like it. I'm actually a pretty patient person. I'm more than capable of waiting. I'd just rather not. If I'm in a particularly long line at the grocery store, I'm actually one of those folks that'll pull their phone out and I'll start reading news stories or whatever I can. But here's the psychology behind it for me. You see, that way it's not so much like I'm waiting as much as it is that I get interrupted from my reading to check out. I feel a lot better about that because, you see, I just can't wait. I have a number of friends who love to fly. But I think there might not be many more things more miserable to me than being on the back of a plane as it's trying to unload. I just can't wait. Now, there is one kind of waiting that I don't mind that much. It's a kind of waiting that I call anticipatory waiting. It's very different from the waiting in the checkout line or on the back of a plane. It's the kind of waiting that we did when we were children and it was Christmas Eve. Imagine that with me. You can close your eyes if you would like. You're a child and it's Christmas Eve. You just returned home from a magical night. The church's candlelight service was fantastic and fascinating. The music was beautiful, sweet and moving, and at times almost haunting in the most wonderful way. And at the conclusion of the service, the room was lit in the glow of all the candles, making not only the faces of those around you glow, but almost warming you from the inside out. And now that you're home, the anticipation is killing you. You are expectantly tucked into bed while the proverbial visions of sugar plums danced in your head, hopeful about what Santa might bring. On nights like that, at times like that, my I just can't wait turns to I just can't wait. That kind of waiting isn't so far removed from the kind of waiting that we heard about today in the reading from Isaiah. It's the same kind of waiting we hear about throughout the Old Testament. It's anticipatory waiting. It's expecting something wonderful to happen. Imagine now if you're in Bethlehem, you're Jewish, and at times the world seems to be against you. Your people's history, your religious writings in part, are a response to oppression, slavery, marginalization. You're convinced that Yahweh, God, will deliver you from the oppressive peoples that seem to constantly rule you in forms of government. And for centuries, for literally ages and generations, you and the people of your heritage have shared the plight of your journey and the promise of redemption from it in stories and songs that have been passed down from generation to generation to generation. But tonight, you have just heard the most amazing thing. The rumors are that a deliverer, that a redeemer, the anointed one, has, quote, torn heaven and come down. The rumors, if the rumors are right, your prayers have finally been answered. You rush to the place you have heard about, slightly surprised that it's basically a rundown shack. But excited nonetheless, like a child ripping through wrapping paper on Christmas morning, you throw open the gate and you find looking down at a baby in a feeding trough. Let's stop there and be reminded of the words that we just heard from Isaiah, the very words that might have been running through your mind had you really been there that night in Bethlehem on that historical eve. Oh, that you would tear open the heavens and come down, so that the mountains would quake at your presence, as when fires kindle brushwood, and the fire causes water to boil, to make your name known to your adversaries, so that nations might tremble in your presence. When you did awesome deeds that we did not expect, you came down, the mountains quaked at your presence. A baby. A baby in a feeding trough. The mountains quake at your presence? We have all kinds of pictures and images that we like to carry with us about what that night must have been like. But unless you were one of the ones for whom the angels appeared to say that this Christ the King has been born to you today, well, I suppose that the event you thought would be like a mountain quaking must have seemed little more than a quiet rumor from the other side of town. What you thought was going to be the day you knew fully what it was like to be in the presence of God must have seemed like nothing more than another reminder of how absent God can sometimes feel. Now, that image, the thought of that first Christmas being something less than celebratory may not sit very well with you. For some, it might be downright upsetting, honestly, but the reality is, throughout the Bible, from Isaiah to Jesus, we have felt what seems like the absence of God. Today's text hints at it, saying, "For you have hidden your face from us." And Jesus, even quoting the Psalms, cries out from the cross, my God, why have you forsaken me?" If we pause to think about it, our world and our lives are riddled with seemingly godless moments as well. It can be as simple as moments when you wonder if you're just praying to yourself. It can also be as catastrophic as events like the Holocaust or the Hoshoah, 9/11, the genocide in Darfur, events where you would have hoped to see the hand of God intervene. But it did not. We humans, we've struggled with events like that and God's role in them for as long as we had worshiped God. We humans, we've struggled with the concept of God with us and what that looks like. How that is even realized from the moment we began to believe in God. And because of that, as we can see in today's words from Isaiah, we are inevitably going to come face to face with disappointment at times because, like at the manger, God is seldom what we expect. Our human minds cannot wrap around the full divinity of God. Advent is about longing somewhere deep inside ourselves. An anticipation of what might be. A hopefulness that God will be present with us and that because of it, we will be better. With so many pages of history already written, we have the advantage of perspective and it has much to teach us. We know that what God will be, what God will do, the way God will participate in the world, it'll probably not be anything like what we expected. It'll be a baby lying in a feeding trough. While Isaiah prays for a God to be seen in the quaking of the mountains, longs for a God to be present in a roaring fire, we're reminded by Elijah in 1 Kings that God wasn't in the earthquake, that God wasn't in the fire, but instead, God was in the silence. Contemporary version of this sort of duality is the way that so many of us seek to find meaning in the activities of Christmas season. A perfect example of it is the disparity between Thanksgiving and Black Friday. On Thanksgiving Day, we give thanks for the abundance that we have. And on the next day, we rush out to get more stuff. We are even willing to wait in absurdly long lines, sometimes at 4 a.m, just to get that more stuff. We've been taught, dare I say, trained, to find meaning in the holidays by consuming, by getting caught up in the busyness of the business of the season. As we've seen, though, this part of the season, Advent, is supposed to be more about waiting for something holy than seeking out a bargain. It's supposed to be more about quietness than busyness. It's supposed to be more about the simple than the supersized. We are much more likely to find God in a rundown shack than in a radio shack. We're much more likely to find God at a soup kitchen line than online at Amazon. We are much more likely to find God in the least of these than in Tiffany's. As Christians, we rush to Christmas all too quickly. In too many Christians' eyes, Christmas begins with Advent. And it's easy to understand why. Christmas decorations have been abundant in retail stores since before Thanksgiving, and we even decorate our churches with Christmas wreaths and garland, much like we decorate our homes for Christmas. And I'm not saying we shouldn't do it, because I think it's absolutely beautiful. I'm simply saying we have to learn to have a different understanding of Advent. C.S. Lewis once said, "The Christian faith is a thing of unspeakable joy, but it does not begin with joy, but rather in despair. And it's no good trying to reach the joy without first going through the despair." That is, at least in part, a part of Advent. That is, at least in part, part of the anticipation, the waiting of Advent, the longing for something better. The struggling with the despair in this world and a longing for a God to make it better. It's a reflection of our religious ancestors who waited for the promised Messiah who would deliver them from their difficult and oppressed lives. And possibly most importantly, it is a reminder of those who even today are waiting and hoping for an escape from their difficult and oppressed lives. So I guess I'd expand on Lewis's comments by saying that in order to reach the fullness of the joy that Christmas will ultimately offer, we must truly and deeply understand the fullness of despair that the world can frequently offer. Leaping into the consumption-oriented demeanor that has been so prevalent this time of year will only rob us. It will rob us of the potential expansiveness of joy that awaits us on the other side of it. In order to fully appreciate the beauty of God with us, delivered as a child in a manger, we must exchange our consumption for compassion during Advent. I can't wait. I'm really bad at waiting. But Advent is about a different kind of waiting. It's about an anticipatory waiting. It is in some way similar to the waiting that we felt on Christmas Eve, a waiting that's expecting something wonderful. But Isaiah's words serve to remind us that our Advent anticipatory waiting is an informed waiting. It's a waiting that has seen the world. It is a waiting that has known pain and suffering. It's a waiting that knows what it is like to stand with the least of these. It's a waiting that knows profoundly how much this sometimes broken world needs the hope of God, needs the love of God. This Advent season, let us hold tightly to that kind of anticipation, like a child on Christmas Eve, as we wait expectantly for God.